This talk was given by Patrick Yunnan Kelly at Zen Mountain Monastery. Yunnan is a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. All of our talks are offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
The way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? The Dharma vehicle is free and untrammeled. What need is there for concentrated effort? Indeed, the whole body is far beyond the world's dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It is never apart from one, right where one is. What is the use of going off here and there in practice? And yet, if there's the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. So good afternoon. My name is Yunnan. I've done this a couple times, and I have to say it's still kind of nerve-wracking. So this passage that I just quoted is from Dogen. It's the Fukan Zazengi, the first paragraph of the Fukan Zazengi, which is his beginning instructions in Zazen. And I've spoken on it. I think I've given several talks on it, but I keep coming back to it. It's very rich. And I remember I heard this for the first time maybe about 30 years ago. And I heard it in German because I was practicing there. And it struck me right away, and I felt at the same time that this is absolutely preposterous and self-evidently true. I felt both of those at the same time. I felt like I was coming home. Maybe some people have had a similar experience with some of these texts. In any case, what I'd like to do is to take this as a springboard to talk about a spiritual path. What is a spiritual path? What is a Buddhist path? We talk about it all the time. We use the word all the time, but what does it mean? And so let me start with just a little bit. I want to start with a little bit of historical background. I don't want to go into this too much, but I think of it in the spirit of 72 labors brought us this Dharma food, so we should know how it comes to us. So the notion of a path goes back to the very beginning of Buddhism. It's in the Fourth Noble Truth, as Shugen was talking about yesterday. It was really probably the Buddha's first teaching and something that he kept coming back to. There's the truth of suffering, dukkha, the truth that suffering has a cause, samudaya, that cause is craving or clinging. Because it has a cause, it has an end, nirodha. And then finally, marga, or the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the practices leading to the liberation of suffering. And the Buddha listed them as right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So this path, marga, it's a path, it's a practice that leads to the end of suffering. And so Zen Buddhism comes maybe 1,000, 1,500 years after the Buddha, really from the encounter between Indian Mahayana Buddhism, particularly the Madhyamaka and Yogacara schools that were Indian, with, as they came to China, encountered some of the indigenous Chinese traditions, in particular Taoism. So Madhyamaka was really, it's really identified with Nagarjuna. And this is really the school that sort of, that emphasizes shunyata, emptiness of all phenomena. Not just the self, but of all phenomena that we encounter. And then Yogacara is a bit, it comes a bit later, but it's very elaborate, but I think of it as sort of like Buddhist homeopathic medicine, and that it takes methods of analyses that are conventionally real, but ultimately not real, and uses them to examine cognitive processes that are conventionally real, but ultimately not real, in order to liberate afflictions that are conventionally real, but ultimately not real. And so Taoism, on the other hand, is deeply rooted in Chinese culture. It goes back to Neolithic times or earlier. And it was always, it seems to have been rooted in shamanic practices and was always had a very deep affinity for the natural world, a strong love of mountains and forests and streams. The word Tao, actually, from which Taoism takes its name, seems to refer to like it's the sort of the unknowable principle or process that generates all of the 10,000 things, all of phenomena. But the word Tao can also mean to say or to speak. So in the Tao Te Ching, which is the well-known sort of Taoist classic, sort of like the fountainhead of Taoism, the first line, now forgive my pronunciation, is something like Dao Ke Dao, Fei Chang Dao, which means Dao is the Tao, and Ke is to be able to or can, and Dao, the Tao that can be Taoed, or the Tao that can be spoken, and then Fei is negation, Chang is eternal, and Dao. The Tao that can be spoken of is not the eternal Tao. Or the Tao that is called Tao is not the true Tao. And it starts off in this line, and then it spends several dozen chapters talking about the Tao that can't be spoken of, which should sound familiar. We do that here a lot. Another thing, I don't know if this works in Chinese, but I was just thinking if you were to say to walk the Tao, you could also translate it as that to walk the talk. I don't know if that works in Chinese, but it seems to work in English. Now, and Buddhism entered China in the first or second century during the Han Dynasty. And there's a lot that happened in between. It's really interesting, but I'm not going to go into it too much in the interest of getting to the meat of this. But by the time we get to Dogen, which is then 1,000 years later in the 1200s, one thing that I did want to mention is that as Buddhism came to China, as it was being translated into Chinese, the word Tao was often used to translate the word Marga, or path. So there was this sort of syncretism, the fusion between the Marga, the Buddhist path, and the Tao. So by the time we get to Dogen in the 13th century, they seem, in the Chan tradition, they seem really fused together. So for example, in the first line of the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, which many of you know, it starts out, these mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the Tao of the ancient Buddhas. It's sometimes translated the actualization of the way of the ancient Buddhas or the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. Both seem to work. And by the way, actualization is Genjo, as in Genjo Koan. The Genjo of the Tao of the ancient Buddhas. And so that Tao, in that line, Dogen says the Tao is basically, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. He didn't come to that easily. That was really the heart of his great question when he set out. He wondered, if the way is basically perfect and all-pervading, what need is there to practice? What is all of this about? And he couldn't answer it. It drove him to China in search of a teacher. And he ultimately met Tiantong Rujing there and settled the matter. And just one more interesting fact, Dogen actually means source of the Tao, source of the way. So we experience all sorts of roads and paths and ways in our lives. I made a list of a few: bike paths, garden paths, spiritual paths, the monastic path, the householder path, the Noble Eightfold path, the primrose path, the road less traveled, the long and winding road, the yellow brick road. There's Broadway, the Buddha way, the way of reality, the great way, safe way. There's way-seeking mind. I suppose there's also safe way-seeking mind. The interesting thing about a path is that it's something that we do. It's a practice. We walk upon the path, we travel down it, and as we do that, we move through our lives, through space and time. We can think of our life as a path, as a life journey. We start out at the beginning of the road, we call that birth, and then we walk for several years or decades until we reach the end of the road, and we call that death. In a sense, the way that we travel this path between birth and death defines us. And it seems that we have some say in the matter, we have some choice in the matter, but there are also aspects of it that seem to be out of our hands. You might say that that's due to karma. So we might walk the path of a teacher, a nurse, a parent, a seeker, a monastic, an artist, a Christian, a Buddhist, an atheist, a man, a woman, a non-binary person, a white person, a black person, a brown person, an Asian person. We're each born into particular circumstances, and to some degree, those circumstances shape our particular view of the world. Not just our opinions, but actually how we perceive the world. And from our perceptions come our actions. Different beings see things differently. And as Dogen says, these different ways of seeing are the conditions under which we kill or give life. So we should study them very carefully. And the way we study it is to study it exhaustively and then study it even more. And not just with the mind. We study it with the body. We study it with all of the things we encounter. We study it with the 10 directions. We study it as self. We study it as other. We study it as male, female, non-binary, as citizen, non-citizen, rich and poor, progressive, radical, centrist, conservative, human and non-human, deva, human being, hungry ghost, hell being. We study it as a sentient being and as an insentient being. I've been working lately as a chaplain, and so I just go through the hospital, and it's in New York, and I meet all sorts of different people. And my ongoing challenge is to meet them. You know, I don't know where people are coming from, all sorts of different places. And so sometimes I succeed and sometimes I don't. And just for example, sometimes if I go into a room where it's a Muslim family, then I'll walk in and I'll say, Salaam Alaikum. It's a beautiful greeting. Or if there's a Catholic patient, sometimes I'll ask them if they'd like to say the Our Father or the Hail Mary with them. And sometimes they let me. So I just bring that in. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. I was a bit self-conscious about this sort of thing at first, but it's really growing on me. Another story, I was in the Hermitage just the week before this one. And I was in the middle of the night, I woke up and I sensed that something was on the table in front of the right on the porch. And I realized, oh, I forgot something. I left something outside. piece of food or something, and I saw that it was a raccoon. So I went out and I opened the door. I opened the door, and the raccoon's standing at the top of the steps with a bar of soap in one hand, with a bite out of it, just standing on its hind legs and just looking at me. And we looked at each other for a bit, and I said, "Put that down." And he just kept looking at me. And we had a bit of a standoff for a bit. And so then I said, and he put it down and waddled off. So when we walk a path, we may also think of it as a sort of, we may think of a path as something that has a fixed location with respect to which we orient ourselves, or that it's a thing. Either literally or a sort of conceptually, as a sort of bedrock way the world is, a collection of facts or ideas or principles on which we build the rest of our views. But as Shugan was mentioning yesterday, this sort of sense of a path as a thing is really just a sort of shadow or projection of our sense of self. In the sense that to perceive a fixed thing outside implies, in some sense, that there's a fixed subject of perception that's observing it. In other words, a self. But if we look closely, or even if we're half asleep, sooner or later, the world will let us know that the path is not fixed. You know, rivers and streams, if you watch them long enough, meander in their course, or a person dear to you may have a terminal diagnosis. The subway is delayed at 42nd Street due to an earlier incident. There's all sorts of unanticipated things that happen. In the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, Dogen says, "The Blue Mountains are constantly walking. Those who doubt that the mountains walk do not yet understand their own walking. It is not that they do not walk, but that they do not yet understand, have not made clear walking itself. Those who would understand their own walking must also understand the walking of the Blue Mountains." This may seem like metaphoric or poetic language, and it is, but it's more than that, actually. I was just thinking, if you consider it from the point of view of geology, it makes perfect sense to speak of mountains walking. So here in eastern North America, if you consider the last billion years, there have been four mountain-building events. They're called orogenies. So there's the Granville orogeny, which happened about a billion years ago and built up mountains that were about probably as high as the Himalaya. About 500 million years ago, there was another one, the Taconic orogeny, which built up another set of mountains that were about as high as the Alps. Both of these have completely eroded away. They're gone. It happened two more times. And so these mountains are rising and wearing down, rising and wearing down. In his Geological History of North America, Annals of the Former World, John McPhee writes, "The poles of the earth have wandered. The equator has apparently moved. The continents, perched on their plates, are thought to have been carried very far and to be going in so many directions that it seems an act of almost pure hubris to assert that some landmark of our world is fixed." This is, again, Dogen picks up where he leaves off. He says, "This being the case, it becomes difficult to explain by what and of what this present land and palace are made. To say that they rest on the wheel of space and the wheel of wind is true neither for oneself nor for others. It is just speculating on the basis of small understanding, and is only said out of fear that without such a resting place, things would not abide. The Buddha has said all dharmas are ultimately liberated. They have no abode. We should realize that although they are liberated without any bonds, all dharmas abide in their own state." And that's not even the end of it. And if anyone, I just saw right before session, there was an article in the New York Times about, really fascinating, about scientists looking into some of these microbial communities that are in the deep earth. So for a long time, people thought that yeah, there's microorganisms in the topsoil, but it goes down maybe a few feet, maybe a few dozen feet, and then after that it's just barren rock. But it turns out that they go way, way down, thousands of feet, even many miles down. The whole crust of the earth is pervaded with these microorganisms, that these chemolithotrophs that live on sulfur and iron compounds. They don't need any light. They just eat rock, basically. And not only that, but there are some researchers who think that these organisms actually are responsible for the fact that there's land on the planet, in the sense that the byproducts of the bacterial metabolism sort of lubricate the continental plates as they go, it's called subduction, they go under another plate, and then they melt, and lighter rock gets distilled through this process so that it floats up on top. So they think without these microbes, there wouldn't be land on the planet, which is really kind of far out. So what they're, in other words, the upshot of this is that they're saying that the line between biology and geology is really not very well defined at all. Or as Dogen says, the Blue Mountains are neither sentient nor insentient. So as I said, I spent the week in before this in Hermitage, and as I come up, you know, on the journey, I get on the interstate on the bus, and then I'm Route 28, and then I'm Route 212, and then I take Plank Road, and then the gravel driveway, and then turn off on the old logging path, and then take the footpath across the bridge. And after that, it's just squirrel tracks and deer tracks. And, you know, a path can be very helpful in that it shows us a way, it gives us a direction, and importantly, it gives us models who have walked it before, people who have gone there before. But there's a danger there, too, in the sense that it's easy to get tunnel vision when you're on a path. It's easy to judge yourself in reference to what we think our journey ought to look like compared to someone else. Or maybe we have some of the qualities that this person who went before had, but others maybe not. I mean, who am I to compare myself to the Buddha? So we judge ourselves, and we can judge ourselves in reference to the Tao that can be spoken of. And for that reason, it's good sometimes to go off the trail altogether into the unknown, to get lost, to go into the unknown. Is being lost the same as not knowing, or is it different? You know, it can be very difficult to be off the trail. It's actually a very painful situation to be in. It can be very lonely. But if you think about it, actually, that's what the Buddha did. There was no Buddhism when the Buddha set out. And in a sense, that's true of each one of us. No one has realized your life before. And you're the only one who can do it. And as you do it, you become an ancestor for those who are coming along afterwards. So your path through this difficult forest of brambles becomes a trail for those further on down the road. I remember years ago when I lived here with my partner, Mego. I remember once we had a really difficult week, and we were quarreling a lot. And so after the Sunday program, we were up in where the greenhouse is now. Before the garden was there, it was just a lawn, and there was a tree and a bench. And we were sitting on the bench up there trying to work things out a bit after the program. And Dido would drive his Jeep to the right out here and park it, and then drive back to the Abbassy. And we see him getting his Jeep from across the lawn and start to drive back. All of a sudden, the Jeep turns off the road and starts driving across the lawn up to where we are. And we look at each other and we're like, what on earth is he doing? He pulls up and he turns around right a few feet from us, and he sticks his arm out the window and he goes, "You guys being nice?" And we said, "Oh, yeah?" I said, good. He turns the Jeep around, goes back onto the road, and motors off. So, Sesshin is a good opportunity to lose our way and find it again, and then to lose it again, and then to find it again, and over and over. But we can always find the path again. It's never, as Dogen says, it's never apart from one, right where one is. Looking for the path, having lost the path and looking for the path is like having misplaced your nose in the middle of your face. Guaranteed, it's not very far away. We even have instructions. Those are, see the thought, let it go, and return to your practice. Another way to put it is, where is your mind right now? Where is your mind right now? What about right now? That's your path. We just have to practice it. And when we practice wholeheartedly in this way, this body and mind is itself the way. The body and mind of others is the way. Mountains and rivers and the great earth are the way. When you come, the whole earth comes. When you go, the entire sky goes. So let me just, I'll end with a poem. This is by Walt Whitman. This is called Song of the Open Road. Afoot and lighthearted, I take to the open road. Healthy, free, the world before me. The long brown path before me, leading wherever I choose. Henceforth, I ask not good fortune. I myself am good fortune. Henceforth, I whimper no more, postpone no more, need nothing. Done with indoor complaints, libraries, querulous criticisms, strong and content, I travel the open road. The earth, that is sufficient. I do not want the constellations any nearer. I know they are very well where they are. I know they suffice for those who belong to them. Still, here, I carry my old, delicious burdens. I carry them, men and women. I carry them with me wherever I go. I swear it is impossible for me to get rid of them. I am filled with them, and I will fill them in return.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.